From Knockadoon to Ardmore, so much to do and see. Our resident historian is back with us again this week. Mike Brooks, you're very, very welcome to the programme. Thanks very much for coming in to us.
Thanks very much, Noel. Good morning. We also, inside, we'll see, obviously, we mentioned the Church of Ireland, built in 1818, inside there, and then St. Cronan's Church, Cronan's Church, which is a Roman Catholic church, was built in 1827. I thought it was older, actually. It looks newer than that, actually.
And yes, that's just above the community centre now,
It's on the road to Eglish, if you were heading to Dungarvan, that's around the corner.
When you come up to the Clanmel Road, there's a slight turn off as you go up the hill towards Carndav.
That's it.
It's just there in the corner,
corner. And that was actually, as I said, built in 1887 under the direction of the parish priest, Father Michael O'Donnell, who's buried now in the graveyard himself. And it said here, stonemasons and other craftsmen travelled far and wide to work in this building, and many remained and became long-standing residents of the village, which is a usual kind of practice as well.
Yes, because I think a lot of the Cures and the Welshes came from around Clashmore side when they were building the cathedral in Cove. Much the same thing happened. There was tradesmen came from miles around, and a lot of them settled in Cove area.
But you would, I suppose, they were there for long periods of time as well. Anyway, and then they make the local lassies
exactly. As I said, they integrated themselves into society and into the life there as well.
Listen, it happened to the German prisoners in the Curragh at the time during World War II.
Exactly.
There's a lot of the families still up in the Curragh because they all got married afterwards to the local farming girls because they were working on the farms and all that.
Well, they had such a good time, when you think of it as the other way around, the way we say English or Irish or Allied prisoners were treated in Germany, and when they came over here, so they thought, listen, it was a holiday.
Jesus, you know, who wants to go back and wants to break over here?
Who wants to go back? But there you are,
And we were just saying about the church, right beside the church, it was the old Clashmore National School, built in 1887, and it's now the community hall actually there in Clashmore.
Yeah, it serves as kind of a second community hall there as well, you know, but I think just based on the model of these two or three room old classrooms, boys on one side, girls on the other, and that was it.
It
gave a basic education, but that was built in...
1887.
Fascinating.
It's a good old, and it's still there, you know, it's nice to see it as well.
It is, of course, and still in use today, which is, I suppose, a testament, I suppose, to the builders and indeed to the community out there as well.
Absolutely.
But
even, and Noel, I'll fly through this one now as well. Clashmore House, there's no Clashmore House anymore. Clashmore House would have been the big house of the area.
Yes.
And what it says here, from the 17th century to the 20th century, the village would have certainly been dominated by this presence of the Clashmore House. And it was the seat of Richard Power, MP, who served in successive parliaments for County Waterford. So the Powers, again, local name, you know, the way the Poors when they came to from the Norman times.
And Power still is a very West Waterford name, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Good morning to Thomas Power, actually. I went to school with Thomas there, on the road down to Ardmore there as well. He'll be farming now in the morning. He won't hear this at all.
Yeah.
So good morning to all the Powers there as well.
Pill Park. There's another blast of them up around Pill Park side there.
But it was, what it says here was later the property of Lord Hastings, who was the Earl of Huntington. What a nice title. And he married the last remaining Power, who was Elizabeth Ann, in 1835. So the Clashmore House went over to him or them then at that stage.
And Clashmore House, have any idea of its location?
We do, actually. We're talking, if you go past now the community hall, we'll say the old Church of Ireland.
Yes.
The hall, and you go up that road.
Past the church.
You're heading for kind of the Ballinaclash, the road down to Ballinaclash, and we'll say the house itself, there's nothing there, but now what's left is the farm is still there. And I kind of, if you Google map it, I did it now as well the other day. And obviously there's people living there as well. There's cars and things like that inside there as well. There's a lovely archway going into the old farmyard of Clashmore House.
Are we talking about the road, we said the back road to Eglish or the road to Clanmill, for want of a better word now?
Yeah, goodbye. So we say you come up the village, turn left.
Yes.
Carry on up there, probably I'd say a kilometre or 2 kilometres or whatever it was, Noel, and it's just kind of there. Now, it was all very close anyway, because we'd be going down to Raheem Key.
The garden was down there.
So obviously it went down as far as...
Yeah, when you mentioned Ballinaclash up there, so the Creamery Road, I think people local call it.
I think it was
the Creamery Road they call it. I think they do anyway, the Creamery Road.
I tried to, you know, Google Map from the Google Maps and all that kind of thing, and then you can walk past. But it definitely, the farmyard is still there.
Still there,
people living there as well. It looks lovely. The house itself is no more because what it says was the house is now non-existent after being destroyed over 100 years ago. Not sure now how it was destroyed. Not sure if it was in the wars or whatever it was at the time. I've no idea.
Yeah, and that's the great pity, I suppose. A lot of these old houses, even though they were masterpieces, a lot of them are burnt.
Well, they were, because, you know, obviously with the British rule and the absentee landlords at the time and what was happening with the Black and Tans burning Irish houses.
Yeah, and some of them, I suppose, like the roofs were taken off to avoid the taxes.
Well, it was. That was done too.
And a lot of them went to rack and ruin, which is a great pity, but there you are.
Well, I'd say this was destroyed because what it says was they said there was a lot of the ornate cut stone from the building can still be seen today. Strewn around the grounds of St. Mochu's Well. We were just talking about Raheem Key on the road down to Raheem Key. So if we go back to the grotto, the hill, when you go straight to your left, you go up the hill to the GA grounds, to the lime kiln we were talking. If you kind of go straight on, before you go over the bridge, there's a road, little road, and if you go down there, that's Raheem Road, and Rat is a fort, small road, so obviously there must have been a small fort down there at some time as well anyway, so there'd be no problems. But and it says here again, today only the impressive farmyard and associated buildings are still in extent. And I said, like, the powers were fair landlords, so I'm not sure would they have been burnt out, you know, the way, because
it's hard to know history, like, from that point of view. It's very, very hard to know what actually happened.
And, yeah, we'll have to speak one of the locals, I'd say.
Yes.
Good morning, Terry, again.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, what I said about you. Yeah. So we were just talking about going on to Raheem Key, actually, and other known as Ballyheeny Key, was a dock for cargo carrying lighters on the river. What's the river called? Grea? I'm not sure what the river, that little river that goes through Clashmore. Sorry again for things, but it was used up to the 1940s. Now, if you go down to it, right?
Yes.
You drive down the road. It's a very small road anyway. And you go in, it's like a little car park, and you're seeing the sign that this was Raheem Key.
Yes.
And you're saying, where the hell is Raheem Key? Because Raheem Key. Cannot see a drop of water. All the reeds are actually growing up.
So obviously the
water is after kind of...
And of course, at the time, I suppose the key was kept clear anyway. Because there would be traffic from Yall and traffic up and down, I suppose.
But it's well worth just to get onto it because, as I said, you won't actually see a drop of water because it's just kind of surrounded. Well, the last time I was there anyway, I might actually go down soon because during the winter time you get to see a lot more
Of course you would, less growth.
Absolutely. And as I said, like, it's amazing because it was used up to the 1940s. They said coal, timber and barley, among other goods, were transported here from the port of Yall to stock general stores of the village, and barrels of whiskey were brought in the opposite direction from the Clashmore distillery, which we'll get on to next.
Yes.
On the opposite bank, there's another disused key, which serves as a private one for Clashmore House Estates. So obviously Clashmore House Estates would have been the other side, the fields up from that side of it as well anyway.
But it illustrates to us too the importance of the Blackwater for trade. We were just talking about it at the outset of the programme. It was the gateway basically to the south of Ireland, and indeed there were so many little keys
and same with, we covered
a lot of them before, like,
we did, and
we're discovering new ones the whole time.
I suppose for villages like we'd say Clashmore and more Maglish above as well.
Yeah.
There was all different keys. So obviously the lighters would go up, and lighters were very small, probably 10 ton.
Yes.
Kind of they'd bring up, but still they'd bring a lot to the people. So the big ships would come into Yall and then they'd send the lighters up.
Yeah.
So, you know, there'd be different people getting smaller goods.
Of course,
And there's no point trying to get a big ship up there. So you'll put them onto the lighter as well. Mm. But yeah, my kind of favourite bit was Clashmore Distillery and
yeah, tell us about Distillery and Clashmore. So, yeah,
I like whiskey. Yeah. And but it was established in what they said in 1825. Now there was 1825 or 1835 because it said there's kind of two. I tried to find it a few times. There was different places, and they said 18. I'd say 1825, and it was by Lawrence Dennehy from Laurentum House, and I think that's Licky Bridge area. I think it's still there as well. Just as you drive past Licky Bridge, you're coming up the hill a bit. I think that's on your left-hand side, if I'm right. And then with Lawrence Dennehy and Robert Power Ronan. So again, the Ronans. And you can see it, Robert Power Ronan. So obviously, he got married to one of the Power girls. And so they kept the names as well. And both of them were very well-known businessmen in the area anyway. The building is unique in this country as it's the only distillery mill chimney. So if you're out, you can still see it.
I still see it,
it's there. And it's the only chimney which actually spans the river. Which propelled the mill, you know, the way. So the water was there to propel it, but I don't know why they actually built the chimney over the river, you know, the way, which is unusual.
Which is unusual.
There's a fair amount of, you know, weight compression
on the chimney. Must have been done as a kind of an arch formation, I suppose, and it could be done under a certain number of floors, I suppose.
But the good thing about it was, at its peak, the distillery produced up to 20,000 gallons of whiskey annually, which is a fine.
That's a huge amount, isn't it?
And there's a lot of heating up of it. And we'll say from what it said then was the distillery had an adjoining house which had a secret cellar where illicit whiskey was stored to avoid tax.
We made
100 gallons, but really it was 300 gallons, you know the way.
Well, so it's 100 for them and 200 for us, yeah.
Absolutely.
But I suppose, listen, every distillery is possible in the place had that at the time.
There was some for the locals and some for the taxmen.
Exactly.
What they said was it was actually constantly raided, so these boys must have been well known by everybody, by the excise officers. And on one occasion, as the story goes, not a true story, by the way, Noel, the workers released thousands of gallons of whiskey into the river, and rumour has it that the cattle that drank from the river later that day were all drunk and staggering around the fields.
as well as the people. So, fascinating.
They said it was after this time, the distillery was leased to several different tenants, so that obviously the guys who owned it leased it, but ultimately the distillery itself closed in around 1840, and then was later used as a flour mill adjacent to it as well, and that ceased in about 1897. So that's my story from Clashmore at the moment, anyway, Noel.
And still they gazed, and still the wonder grew that one small hint could carry all it knew. Mike, again, you're a mine of information, and indeed we're certainly after learning so much about, as the areas, as the title says, from Knockadoon to Ardmore, so much to do and see. And listeners, I'm sure you'll agree with me, and there is so much to do and see. Mike, thanks very much for coming in, and certainly looking forward again to another.
Could I, just 2 minutes now actually here, just a very quick one, if it's okay. I was talking to Mike Hackett again.
Oh, yes, yes.
And if you don't, I just won't keep
you. By all means.
And it's a very quick one as well. So we'll say, because we're dealing with Clashmore, there's a guy buried in Clashmore called Bill Lennon. And Bill Lennon was a fearless rebel back in, you know, we all did the 100 years of during the 19th, the War of Independence and all this.
Yes.
This guy, Bill Lennon, was really prominent, you know, with the West Waterford brigades there. He worked with all the lads from Ardmore and all that as well. And so, but I'll tell you, I'm going to go very, very quickly, because what it was Mike passed it on to me as well. And he said to definitely mention Liam Dunn, because he gave me Liam's from Clashmore, Liam Dunn's notes as well. But it was just, I just very quickly say it, because there's a reason for this as well. And it just says, Bill Lennon lies buried inside the gates of the old graveyard at the top of Clashmore village. He died in 1960. And he was born in the Curragh of Ardmore in February 1892.
Right.
So it was just, and he was a very enigmatic character of, we'll say, of the War of Independence and we'll say around West Waterford, the whole West Waterford area. But from 1917, we'll say Bill was recorded as being the original member of the fledging Clashmore Volunteer F company under the Captain Hugh McGrath. There's a lot of McGraths still in Clashmore area. This company was later considered an outpost of the Piltown E Company. So
yes,
they would have worked and all worked together
yes,
as well.
Yes,
anyway.
And they're well known to us as a Piltown company. Well known to us, yeah.
And even would say, and then would say Bill himself became kind of a, what they call a reserve member initially of the ASU, which is the Active Service Unit, under the command of George Lennon. Now, this is Bill Lennon. I don't think George and himself were related.
Were related, yeah.
I have George Lennon's book here, George's Dungarvan. Another
a rebel heart, isn't it, Scott? Yeah.
Rebel heart. Absolutely amazing
account
as well.
Yeah.
Them, if you want to read about the West Waterford guys, Terence. But the Bibles that I have, The Dacia Divided and The Cry of the Corlew, Tommy Mooney.
Oh, yeah, Tommy Mooney. An authority, I suppose. An authority.
Well, they're fantastic because one is the Cry of the Corlew, will say, is before what happened at the War of Independence.
Yes.
And then there is the Dacia Divided, then.
Was the aftermath, yeah. Yeah.
Tommy put down there because his dad was involved.
That's right. We talked to Tommy, actually, and we had him in here, actually. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Mind of information.
Lads, you have to get them two books. If you ever want to know anything about the whole kind of this time 100 years ago plus.
Yes.
Definitely Tommy's book is the most important two books you'll ever read. Anyway, it's brilliantly done. Just about Bill, a very quick one. Huge amounts of he worked tirelessly during the War of Independence, and we'll say the Piltown ambush. We just mentioned the things.
Yes.
He was a part of that as well. He was also a member of, we'll say, there used to be a sniping squad for the RIC patrols at Yall Bridge.
Right.
So they used to be up there as well. In Dungarvan with George Lennon, he was part of the Burgery ambush, where Pat Keaton and Sean Fitzgerald tragically lost their lives as well there. Bill was one of those with Pax Whelan, who was a famous wit, Dungarvan and the Waterford side of as well, and they provided covering fire as drastic efforts were made to recover the Keating, who was seriously wounded, and he died actually of his wounds then afterwards. They said following the Anglo-Irish Treaty, the signing of in 1921, he actually travelled to Kilkenny to sign up for the Free State Army.
Right.
But, I suppose for economic reasons, the way, because a lot of them did. And, but they said, accordingly, it was said that he was shocked to the core by the treatment meted out by the Free State forces to his former comrades, because we know
we know what if brother turned upon brother.
Absolutely.
And sister turned upon sister. It was terrible.
And what they said here was the final straw, was probably when they captured Mick Fitzgerald and Paddy O'Reilly from Yall.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
O'Reilly's Terrace.
Fitzgerald's Terrace.
And they were actually arrested in Ballyclash. And I think he was member of the arresting party, but he saw how roughly they were treated. And he was a member of the arresting party. And both, we'll say, because they all were together in, we'll say, the West Waterford Flying Column as well. So he wasn't happy with this, the way. So what they said was he'd returned to the Volunteers' cause. He left, he deserted, I suppose, the Free State.
Yes.
And he went back, and he would say, because he knew Fitzgerald and O'Reilly was going to be, we'll say, in Ballybricken, they were executed. That definitely was the last straw for him at that stage. So Bill was forced to go underground because he was a wanted man then at that stage as well. He was back with his local column as well. He was marked, the way they wanted to catch him. And he just, he couldn't go home. He couldn't do anything. They were sleeping in barns, ditches.
Yes. He was on the run, so to speak.
And the health-wise for these people was, it was deadly, because there was, in all weather.
See, we have, I suppose, a romantic idea of these people.
And it was rough.
Swashbuckling heroes, etc., fighting for the cause, etc. Nothing ever happens. They're well fed, they're well clothed, they go from place to place, and they're treated like royalty.
It wasn't
the case. But it's not like that at all.
I'm hoping to do bits about, we'll say, the Yall brickworks. And what they said was they used to use the brickworks, the kilns in the brickworks, to heat themselves, during cold nights and all that kind of stuff. They used to break in.
Yes.
Because the bricks used to stay warm for a long time
well. Yes.
But as we were just talking about Tommy Mooney, there was what they said was on the evening of March the 23rd,